Thanks, everyone, for joining us. This is Joe Dagher, the host of the Business 901 podcast. Participating in the program today is Karen Martin. Karen is a seasoned, highly rated lean practitioner and educator who specializes in applying lean and developing continuous improvement cultures in service, government, and office settings. What does the people outside the Kaizen event think about? I mean, have you had that experience, or what are you doing in there? What are they thinking about when they're watching something like that?
Yeah, you know, it depends on the maturity of the organization. The first few for brand new organization, there's just all kinds of suspicion and often a lot of fear around what's being done. But there are things that you can do, even in the very early stages, to help the organization understand what's going on behind those closed doors. And then there are things that you probably should do, no matter how mature the organization is, to communicate clearly. So, for example, one thing is that a good communication up front. Why are we doing this? What is the likely outcome? Who has been selected? Why have they been selected? You know, all of those clear communication techniques that we often forget to do in organizations. Why? Why is such an unanswered question? And we have to be clear on why the event is occurring. And then oftentimes, well, when I'm working with an outside organization, and if I'm having to fly there, this doesn't always happen, but the ideal is to do some sort of a lean overview if the organization's not well-versed yet in what the 8 ways are and what the principles and maybe some of the main tools of lean are, to do some sort of a quick review or overview so that people understand why this is important and how the Kaizen event fits into the larger picture. And then the other thing that's a must-must, especially in non-manufacturing Kaizen events, are regular briefings where you invite in, and I like to look at the people who come to a briefing in two categories. There are those where their participation and attendance is mandatory. The team cannot move forward without them attending these briefings, versus those where it's a courtesy invitation or an optional type of thing. So, for example, in non-manufacturing Kaizen events, one of the things that happens in almost all Kaizen events is policy starts getting challenged. And the team, while they're given clear boundaries on what they can do, they're also given clear boundaries on what they can't do. And one of them is typically frontline workers aren't authorized to change policy. They're authorized to change procedures, but not policy. So in the middle of a Kaizen event, as a policy needs to be challenged in order to streamline a process, we've got to get quick decisions made on that policy and the recommendations the team is making. So leadership, the appropriate leadership, need to be attending the briefings in order to hear why the current policy is presenting an obstacle to improvement, what the team is suggesting for a future policy, how that won't subject the organization to any undue risk, what kinds of, you know, stop gaps or safety nets will be put in place. There, all that dialogue needs to occur real time or they won't be able to move forward and get the improvement actually implemented by the end of the activity, the event. So that helps a lot also, is having those briefings and also, you know, Toyota is so masterful at building consensus. One of the ways to build consensus is not only knowing up front what's going on and having input up front, but also real-time hearing what the team is coming up with and having leadership and the team agree every step along the way so that there are no surprises at the end of it.
Now, do you interview people to determine who's going to be on the team or how is it, or train them in being able to act as a team beforehand?
Yeah, it's a good question. Sometimes I'll give a client a list of criteria to think about as they're forming the team, but typically we start with the function needed first. So what functional representation do we need on the team? And I'm in the middle of planning one right now, for example, and we've identified 10, well, it's not 10 different functions, but we know for some functions we want 2 sets of eyes. So there are maybe, I think there are 6 functions, and we want multiple people representing some of those. So I'm recommending a 10-person team. So I've given them the list of functions, and they're now going to fill in the gaps with who would be an appropriate person because it's a very large organization, so they've got a lot to pick from based on the criteria I've given them. So, for example, for criteria, I'll say, you know, it'd be best to get someone who's a pretty action-oriented person, and they're not going to be shy and that type of thing. But I wouldn't avoid a whiner. I would not avoid someone who maybe the organization feels is not very effective in stating why they're upset with the process, because some of those people in a Kaizen event, not even some of them, all of them that I've experienced in a Kaizen event, when they turn around, and they always do, they become the greatest advocates for the improvement process. They almost become zealots on the new process when they've been finally given a voice. So I encourage the teams that I'm working with that are helping form the Kaizen team not to shy away from those people who they might normally shy away from. The one type of person that is really not a great person to have on a team is someone who is just so shy that no matter how much we try to set the stage for them to feel comfortable, they really won't be active, they won't speak up, they won't raise concerns. That's probably a person that's better suited not being on a team.
So you'd rather have not necessarily the argumentative type, but the one that's going to state an opinion.
Well, yeah, and I'm not so sure I'd shy away from the argumentative type either, because I think, you know, ideally, and you're seeing this a lot in product development teams now, you have very diverse teams, old, new, male, female, different perspectives culturally, different, you're just as much variety as you can get, but it still needs to be folks on the team that are relevant to the process being improved. But the argumentative types, you know, some of those types that are very visionary and not necessarily very tactical, I wouldn't want a whole team filled with those because it's a very tactical activity. But some of those visionaries that are argumentative can be great when it comes especially to the future state design. They may be impatient getting through the current state documentation and getting that deep understanding of the current state, but they may be, you know, the superstars when it comes to future state design.
Okay. Now, you go through and you explain, you know, what to do beforehand. You have the different charts and the different things and it's kind of a step-by-step guide in the book. Do you discuss what to do during the event then?
Yes. So there's a CD in the back of the book that has 15 Excel-based tools in them, and some of them auto-populate fields in other ones or cells in other ones. But there is, for example, a planning checklist for up front, and then there's an execution checklist for during the event, and then there's a post-event list as well. Let me back up. So what we've done with these tools is we've done our best experience. We've pulled together our best experience of what are the typical things that need to be done, but then we've built in user-defined cells for organization-specific issues. So on a planning checklist, for example, there might be something very unique to a particular organization that needs to be standard work every time they're planning a Kaizen event. And same with execution and same with the post-event activities that need to occur. So we have some space for those. But yeah, we've gone through and we've adapted this and we've modified this checklist over years and years of you know, doing Kaizen events. And I think it's pretty thorough. We hope so.
Well, you're talking about have a planning stage, the actual workshop, and then the sustainability phase. Which is the hardest one?
Sustainability.
And why?
You know, if it's well done, if the planning is well done, if consensus is obtained throughout the process, if you have the right team together, if they're given adequate time to truly understand the current state, if they're given the authority to design a really well-thought-out future state that develops a robust process or results in a robust process, the sustainability piece isn't nearly as difficult. What I find actually the greatest challenge in sustainability, and this is something that I really want to figure this one out, but most organizations, non-manufacturing, have a very difficult time ever assigning someone as the, quote, process owner, unquote. And by process owner, I mean one person who looks at the entire process and monitors it and measures it on a regular basis and leads the improvement efforts when they need to improve, or at least, you know, is the springboard for the identifying the need for improvement. Those types of folks are few and far between once you get off the shop floor. And the reason why is that these processes, in the non-manufacturing world are so cross-functional and organizations are so siloed that the org chart, it would throw the org chart on its ear to assign a process owner. Now, I don't think it has to throw the org chart on its ear, but that's what a lot of folks, what's what they think. I think it's possible to have a process owner that is just the logical process owner, and they don't have to report to any one person. But when a process crosses multiple departments, possibly even multiple divisions, I don't see why there still can't be one person that owns that process from a management perspective. But I am not having much success getting organizations to buy into that.
That's interesting, because I would think that, you know, the two things I look at, okay, I got a foreman in the shop, and he's pretty much siloed. He knows this is my process over here, and when it's handed off to me, it needs to come there, and, you know, it's mine in this department. And, you know, that effort, we can make that, and I'll make that changes because that's going to better everybody. But as you say, it's so cross-functional in an office that it is very difficult to say, this is mine.
Yeah, it is. And so what a lot of organizations are doing who, you know, really aren't ready to try this process ownership model, which is very much like a value stream manager is in manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
They are putting together teams of people to get back together again maybe once a quarter or every 6 months to look at the process. So it's still a team-based activity that's, you know, looking at the process. And then each functional area still monitors their piece of the process, and they still, you know, can raise their hand and say, hey, Houston, we've got a problem. We can't meet the time frames anymore, and we need to come back to the table and work it. But this is why having those full-time dedicated improvement professionals internally is so critical. They've got to have somewhere to go with the need for that kind of help because, again, the org chart stands in the way often of anyone from one functional area just saying, hey, we need to improve this. And, again, that's the transition, the awkward transition phase of moving from the way they're currently viewing improvement or not to a Kaizen culture. In a Kaizen culture, that person in that one functional area would absolutely be authorized to say, hey, we've got a problem. Let's get the people together. Let's do this. It just takes a while for an organization to get used to that.
Yeah, that's I have to agree with you, Karen. I think that the team concept is what you want to do, but there, even any team, you still have to have a team leader, okay?
Yeah.
there's got to be someone there.
And when you look at manufacturing, and there are organizations that have been out with the lean journey for 10, 15 years, and maybe be some longer than that. When you think about lean and the office service knowledge work environment, it is very new. And even those organizations that have been at it for 10 and 15 years in manufacturing, you still will report falling off the wagon, as it were, and having a leader leave that then slows the whole lean journey, and continuous improvement doesn't continue as it always did, and then they get back on the trail, and it's a constant battle to keep continuous improvement front and center.
I can still remember, it reminds me a little bit of an analogy here, but back I was a young engineer, and I was out making this piece of equipment work out in the field, and some, you know, older construction worker guy came up next to me, and he said, you know, you really do understand that engineering doesn't start till you turn the key.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went through this whole development, product development process, new piece of equipment, and I looked at him like, well, you know, we're sitting here with a $500,000 piece of equipment. It certainly, a lot of engineers went into it. And you know, and a few years later, and I really learned, and I think that goes with being lean, being new to an office environment, is that most guys out in the shop understands that the new way of doing things, the new product, is the start of the process that is going to evolve. And
right.
I think sometimes in an office environment, it's looked at, you're going to make a change and everything's fixed.
Well, you know, a good point, because that was something that you just triggered the thought as you were talking, is the thing that I find incredibly frustrating, but, you know, it is a reality that all of us who do this kind of work are faced with, is that many organizations will not bring in a consultant to help them start the lean journey to shift their culture. That's hardly ever the stated goal. The stated goal is, you know, help, we've got this problem, we've got this process that's broken, we've got that process that's broken, let's bring in lean and let's use it to fix it. And while, you know, certainly you can get results, and that's a great application of a good, solid, you know, time-tested tool set, that's not really, in my ideal world, why we would bring lean to an organization. It would be, you know, looking at transforming the organization at a cellular level into a high-performing organization that can sustain itself during tough times and make great gains during great economic times and all of that stuff that is, you know, a continuous improvement type of culture. But that's not always why we get brought in.
Is there one thing you would like to end the conversation with here about Kaizen that you could mention?
A couple of things. I think that the planning necessary cannot be overstated. It really needs to be very well thought out. A lot of education, having everyone understand to the degree that they can understand without having gone through one. You know, just getting everyone understanding the whole point of it, and that this is not the be-all, end-all. That it's a means to achieving a small shift in culture, and that all the folks on that team will then become the ombud people, ombudsman, you know, to take this philosophy out to the organization, and that Rome's not built in a day. It's not going to happen quickly. So that planning phase, I think, is absolutely vital. And then the other thing I would suggest is that facilitating Kaizen events does take some pretty thick skin. And so I think that a good facilitator will take a lot of time to reflect after every Kaizen event and continually develop themselves as a facilitator and think back to what worked well, what didn't work well, why didn't it work well. I always recommend to internal facilitators that they take some time and hopefully they co-facilitate internally and take some time to talk with their co-facilitator after the event and reflect back. Because the team experience is key. The results are going to come from that team experience, and a strong facilitator will maximize the team experience. And so that's just something, I think that reflection part is very, very vital for ongoing results.
How can someone get a hold of you?
I have a website, which is www.ksmartin.com. That's www.ksmartin.com. And I'm based in San Diego, California, and my phone number is 858-677-6799. And they can reach me any number of ways. Should I give email as well?
Okay. Well, they can get that off the website probably.
Yeah.
And I'll put a couple things on the writing that will have that. Now, you also have a webinar series that is going on?
Yes, I have in January, I'm having two webinars on January 20th and 21st. January 20th is Lean Psychology, Leveraging Human Nature to Maximize Results. And then the 21st is Putting That Lean Psychology into Action. And I actually don't have the rest of 2010 scheduled yet because I have done a survey on the topics that folks are most interested in. I'm still going through the survey results and scheduling the rest of the year.
I'd like to finish up by thanking you very much, Karen. It was a delightful conversation, and you will be able to listen to this podcast on my podcast site, the Business 901 podcast site, and also it'll be available in the iTunes store.
So thank you very much for having me. It was really a nice conversation. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.